Amazing. Well, it. Okay, can we turn off the sound? Okay, bear with me. Let me see if I can get this in full screen. Oh, I can't. So yeah, prototype. Well, there. Prototype is, like you said, a simplified version of the truth. So something you can give to someone to make them understand something. I already told you who I am, but I didn't tell you that I love prototypes. So this is kind of the agenda for today. We're going to just briefly discuss the design process and then how design is a business. A little bit about the tools you would use to prototype and a little bit about the methods. I will tell you how, basically how not to get fired, what the cases I have are for you to get fired. So please feel free to try them later. And we'll do a short workshop, or actually an extended workshop. So we're about here now in the good morning part. At lunch, we're going to present. And then you're going to do some more work, and then you're going to present at the end of the day as well. This is an agenda-ish. It's not a solid thing. I want you to join in on the conversation along while we go. So feel free to ask questions or give feedback. Short and sweet is the name, though. So yeah, the prototype. You mentioned the simplified version of the truth, which is pretty accurate. It's something you give to someone to make them understand, like, either make them understand something bigger or to understand how they are thinking about the bigger picture. So this is, do anyone of you know this picture? This is John F. Kennedy on the far right, Van Baum in the middle here, and this is the Saturn IV rocket. This is actually at like 2 weeks before the Saturn V launch. So he's John F. Kennedy is pointing up at the rocket, and they're discussing how it's built and what will happen when we get into the stratosphere and so on. And what I find interesting with this image about prototyping is that this is actually a prototype. It's a small replica of the previous stage of that rocket. It's meant to kind of let politicians and people that don't know about tech talk about tech. And it's also meant for the engineers to understand how the whole thing fits together. So that's why I put that there. And this guy, who knows that guy? We have fine art people here. Fine art. Who was fine art? Except you. Didn't someone study fine art? Yeah. Okay. He's older than that. So this is Leonardo da Vinci. He is what you would call like the original prototyper, in the sense that when you look at how he worked, he always made a replica or a model of something, and then he iterated on it, and then he proved it. So when Leonardo da Vinci was young, he was asked to draw a dragon. For those of you who believe Game of Thrones is real, dragons do unfortunately not exist. So it's hard to draw a dragon when you don't know how it looks. But Leonardo was intent on capturing a dragon to actually understand how it works. So he goes about, he goes into his study, and after a while his mom comes along and is like, why are you locked in your study? And also, why does it smell so bad? And he's like, oh, I captured a dragon. The dragon is the smelling thing. And dragons aren't real, so she was curious. It turned out Leonardo da Vinci had sewn together a snake, a bat, and a rat to form a dragon. And he was drawing that dragon, and it was rotting, so it was smelling. And he did that to understand the anatomy of how a dragon might work. And that's basically what a prototype is. It's something that will rot and decay and that you throw away, but it lets you understand how something works. So when you're doing design and innovation, do any of you know this model? Have you seen it before? So what is it? putting you on the spot.
So when you start, you need to produce a lot of ideas, then you analyze those ideas, and then you choose the better one. So that's why it opens, then you analyze, and then it talks to a few more ideas.
This is correct. So when you're trying to get from point A to point B, so point A is you have some sort of vague understanding of what you want to do, and point B is you actually have a product that you can sell or that you can solve some issue with. You will have to dig into the problem area and like figure out which ways can we go, and then you have to understand the problem area, and then you have to do some decisions later on. So prototyping is really good for opening and understanding. It's not so good for maybe closing, but it's really good in here because it gives you a lot of insight. So this is the scientific model. Do you guys know it? Do you guys have Frode Volden? He's probably teach you this. So the scientific model is something we use in, well, classical scientific research. Starts on the top by you observing something. You wonder, what is this? And then you do a lot of questioning about it to form a, should say, hypothesis there, to form an idea of how it works. And then you design an experiment. And then you iterate on that experiment until you actually got data that you can use. And then at some point you can form a theory, and you and other researchers can either prove or disprove your theory, or they will try to disprove it. And if the theory isn't good enough, you start over. So this is a very rigorous process. This is the process used by all like classical research. So every single article you will read will have some form of this model. This is something called design thinking. So you can see it has the same basic building blocks. It's the understand something, define it, ideate, create some kind of experiment on it, prototype and test it. Do you guys know this? It's from the book Changed by Design. So that, yeah, cool. So one person knows it? Two, maybe? No? So Tim Brown, Changed by Design author, he is a leader of a company called IDEO. They are really big on this design thinking thing, and design thinking is really big in the industry at this current time. The difference between the scientific model, this one, and that one, is that this one looks more like that. It's a total mess. It's a total chaos. You have no control at any given time. So it's not a rigorous step-by-step process. You would use prototypes at all these stages. And the point of it being this clustered or this messy is that you have to move fast to make good use of your prototypes. So some smarter people than I have tried to put the whole design thinking thing into context. Like, how can you actually produce stuff with this messy kind of process? So design thinking is really good at understanding your problem area. It's designed to make you understand and solve for huge complex problems. Like world peace is one of the problems you can probably do design thinking on. It's not feasible for how do I make bread in the morning. But at some point you have some kind of product, and then you would move into something we call Lean UX. Those of you who do engineering probably have heard of Lean UX, have you? What is Lean UX? I'm putting you on the spot. No? Okay, so Lean UX is a methodology for creating or improving on a known solution. So you have some kind of idea what you're building, and you have these endless tasks you need to complete that thing. And it's a way of prioritizing, figuring out if they're right, doing the right thing. And at some point you will start building, like you have a finished product and you just need to scale it up, or you need to replicate it, or you need to make it at a large scale. And that's where Agile comes into play. That's actually production line, just making it done. You're done with the research, you're done with the understanding, you have something solid and you just want to produce it. The point of this is that it's a bunch of circles, right? And that's because everything revolves around this thing. It's the sketching or the actually designing, understanding something, and the prototyping, building to understand it. And the faster you can make this thing move, the faster you can make these things move, the faster you actually understand what you're, what the hell you're doing. So you, the faster you can reach your goal, the faster you can solve all your complex problems. I have more circles for you. Sorry. Whoa, this is really, really touchy. So what you're trying to do with this prototype in this process is to understand how your users understand the world. So this is what you call a mental model. So the ones of you who are doing interaction design are probably familiar with this. This is how I understand the world I live in. These are my ideas, my beliefs, my my interpretation of what's going on. And when you're designing something, you will probably make a system model. This is your design. This is how you solve the problems. So these are my needs, and this is your solution. And the point is to get this circle to overlap that, to remove this dissonance over here. This is me not understanding something. This is me going, it doesn't make sense. It's a stupid system. It's not intuitive. This is me going, oh, I get it. It just works. Hey. So you're trying to get those things to overlap. And prototyping plays a really huge role in understanding the mental model of a user. And they don't. Your system model doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to replicate the mental model. Just have to be close enough for someone to understand it intuitively. So it's basically the same process that we talked about before. It's an iterative design process. You design something, you prototype it, you evaluate it, and then you go back to design. Around and around and around. Circles, right? So what would we prototype? Any ideas? You. Okay, more concise. Like what is, think of a problem and then a solution for pro. Oh, we have an answer. Minimum viable products. Yeah, that's right. So do you guys know what an MVP is? So what you said yes. Yeah. What is an MVP?
This is the smallest thing you can provide to your customer that this person could see that this is something that will work and can try it and see, and then you add more functionality later, which is not that much needed.
Yep. So the MVP is basically the first draft that you get. You know, when you're going to deliver your thesis at some point, or you did your bachelor's, you would have a first draft. That's your MVP. It's the smallest thing you can create. It's basically just your headlines. And then you add, and you add, and you add. Oh, god damn it. Sorry about that. So you prototype to understand four things. Prototype to understand the people you're designing for. And they will be different. Like this guy, really fast and nimble. That guy, not so much. This is a child. I hope you see these things. You prototype to understand your object or the thing you're creating, the technology, whatever. Is it a cloud-based thing? Or is it a physical thing? Like a chair needs different approach than cloud-based software. You prototype to understand the location. Like the physical location you're designing for, or the digital location you're designing for. And maybe most importantly, when you're doing user testing, you're designing to understand the interactions. Like, are these interactions human to human? Are they digital to digital, or are they human to digital, or what's going on? I will try to click this without going too far. Perfect. And this is maybe one thing that we kind of negate or neglect when we're doing prototyping, is that we also need to understand the business case. Will we be able to sell this? Will we be able to produce it? Will we be able to actually market it? Not just the user needs. The user needs are fairly simple to solve for. You have someone that has a need. You do some research to understand why they have the need and how that need is visible in the world, then you make a product that fits that need. But you might totally miss on your business case. And this is a difference you will meet from a school project where you have all the time in the world, all the resources in the world, all the knowledge available here. When you move into a corporate, or maybe you start a startup, maybe you do something on your own, perfect. You need to nail the business case first, or else you can't actually produce anything because you won't be able to buy groceries because you need a salary to buy groceries. So business case, important. So this is a paper backpack. Why would anyone make this? Ideas? To not spend too much money on the first prototype. Yeah. What would you try to understand by this? California.
How it feels for the user to carry, how easy it is to like fill better clothes, or if you're worried about how easy it is for someone else to open their clothes and then trying to get something from there.
Yeah, so something about the interaction between the person and the product. This is what you would call a low fidelity prototype. It's made of paper. It's disposable. This is also a prototype. What are the difference between this one and the latter one? Or the first one? Yes, you tried to raise your hand. There was a hand, you sort of had your hand up. I will take that as a hand up. Your thoughts? Yeah. Yeah, so you're testing maybe more for the environment with this one. Not the physicality of the product, but actually the sustainability of the product. So when you're doing like design or anything, you're trying to fit your product into a sweet spot between three things. Desirability: do actually people want your product? Like the paper backpack, do they like the form? Do they like how it looks? Does it have the functionality? You're trying to solve for the viability. Will people actually buy this thing? Like, are they willing to pay the money you're asking for it? Will your production cost actually be low enough to warrant the price you're asking for it? Where is your margin? Where do you make money? So this is your business case. And it's the feasibility. It's, can you actually create this? A lot of startups, when they start, will say, well, I'm starting this new social platform. It's going to be huge. Problem is with a lot of media platforms or social platforms that's going to be huge is that they don't design for the first user. They design for 10,000 or 100,000 users, which is kind of a problem when your mom is probably the only one who will sign up at first, and she will be skeptical. So this is the feasibility. Can you actually... do you have the things to sustain your product? Can you actually build it, the technology and so on? And the point of going really rapid with your prototypes is that if you dig into like your one course, like this is my product, this is the thing I'm going to build, and I'm going to figure out how to build it, so that you might end up chasing dragons, and your sweet spot, the thing here, might be somewhere completely different than what you thought. So you need to check all your angles before you start, or as soon as possible. So that leads us to this kind of cost commitment versus fidelity. So the higher resolution, so fidelity goes from high to low, like the paper thing to the actual product. And the closer you come to an actual product, the more you will be invested in that solution. And at some point you will hit this point of no return where either you have an investor or you have sunk cost or you have something that is so huge that you cannot go back to the drawing board. You cannot go one step back. So you need to do as much prototyping here as possible before you start finalizing your design. So there are a couple of tools you can use for this. I normally start out really simple, with like pen and paper. Those are my favorite. I have a bunch of post-its. I have markers. So workshops and stuff lives down here. At some point, you may be, this is aimed towards a digital prototype, so a app or a web page or something like that. So these are tools you would use for that, by the way. At some point, you will move into more like wireframe-ish. Do you guys know what a wireframe is? Hopefully, one hand, maybe? Vietnam. What is a wireframe? In Norwegian, please. Sorry, so take it in English. Yeah, simple structure. So it's like the MVP of your web page. It's the lowest thing you can create. So it's basically crude drawings. Like, header, nav, content, and then maybe you have an image. That is a wireframe. Doesn't have to be more complex than that. But at some point, you want people to actually see and navigate through this, and this is where Mockingbird and Balsamiq, which are two sort of free tools I highly recommend, comes into play. They make allow you to make really, really rapid prototypes and actually make them clickable. At some point, you will move into more like high fidelity-ish or more complex tools. So this is a Lucid chart. It's to make ER models and systems. Do we have to leave now? Okay, let's take a short fire break. talking about tools. So tools you or that you would typically use to make a digital product. So at some point you move into so sum up. We talked about paper, really important. Do it like the smallest increments you can do. A way to make paper sort of digital. So what you do with these things are that you could put your paper drawings actually into, well, this or that or this. Okay, so this is paper. That would be your post-its, your whatever. This is something called Mockingbird. It's an online tool, so it lives in your browser. I think they have like 30-day trial or something. This is Balsamiq. It's written with the Q on the end. So, Mockingbird. Balsamiq. Then we have Lucid Charts. So Lucid Charts is for making like system models or flow charts or whatever you need to make that has something, a state referring to another state. So it's really, I put it way down here because sometimes you need to understand how your system works before you start making your system. That's kind of important sometimes. But it also expands all the way off. It actually can go even further than that. So in your next tier, you have more of your design tools. This should be familiar to at least some of you. Hands up. Who knows that icon? So what is this icon? Sketch. This is Sketch. What is Sketch? That is correct. It's like it's a light version of Illustrator. It's sort of a hybrid between a prototyping tool and a production tool. It's hard to explain why it's awesome, but it is awesome, and you should totally start using it if you don't. They have a 30-day trial, something like that, and they also have student discounts. So Experience Design from Adobe is kind of the same thing as Sketch, but Experience Design lets you make interactive prototypes as well. So you will actually wireframe something, put color on it, and make animations and make stuff work. This is Atom. It's an online version of Experience Design. So you can do a lot of things in this that you will be doing in this guy as well, which is origami. I'll get back to origami. So this is, you draw, you create, you make everything in your browser, you make it clickable, you make it awesome. Problem with this is that it's super laggy because it's all is done with CSS3, if you know. Some of you should know what CSS3 is. Super not awesome at some times. So yeah, so these are your tools for more high fidelity starting to get into production. And up here we have our more production ready tools. So Adobe Illustrator, Photoshop, you probably all know. And this is something called Origami. So down here we had our prototyping tools for what we call a page-based prototype. Like you have one page, then you click something, then you get a new page, and then you click something, maybe you go back, or maybe you go to a third page. Origami is what you would call a layer-based prototyping tool. So Photoshop, Illustrator, Sketch, Experience Design, all of these works with layers. So instead of you drawing on a flat canvas, you have multiple tiers to that canvas. So it's basically like drawing on 1,000 pieces of paper simultaneously, but each paper has one thing on it. So this line would be on one paper, that line would be on one paper, this box would be on the third paper. And what Origami lets you do is individually position and move each of those papers. So you can make really, really complex animations and really complex transitions and really complex stuff that is still not production. So it's still a prototype. So you still use minimal well, it's not minimal time because it's starting to get fairly complex, but you don't have to be able to code. You don't have to be able to understand web development as a whole. You just have to understand how transitions work and how layering works. And these guys, web developer, do you know these guys? Bootstrap, yes? Foundation? So what is Bootstrap and Foundation? The French guy, you've been talking a lot. This is true. So it's a framework to make web pages more rapidly. So you have kind of a grid that you adhere to, and you have a lot of components ready to use. I know a lot of people, probably you'd think with code. So some of you will start using this like earlier. I put it way up there because it's more of a production-ready environment. You're starting to make something you can actually ship. Like, you guys might have used Dagbladet at some point. Dagbladet is built on Foundation. So everything in Dagbladet is Foundation. And up here, we have our more heavy hitters. This is React. This is Angular, and this is Semantic UI. Hands up. Do anyone know them? Excellent. You are developers. These are development tools. These are to make really complex data-driven web apps. You can also make like phone apps to some extent with them. And these two guys, like the Foundation, your frameworks, and you're actually building tools are way past your limit. You have, when you start making these, you have done architectural design choices. Architectural design choices are not prototypes. You are far beyond prototyping. You have actually making decision that affects how you are able to deliver content through your app. If you're trying to figure out like what is the best purpose of actually getting pizza home to someone, building your prototype in Angular is like, yeah, shooting birds with cannons. That's lame, but yeah, that's basically what it is. It's way too heavy. You should use this. So, how to prototype? There's a couple of slides here. I would like your ideas on how you can actually prototype, or what kind of prototype you would use, or why you would use it, or any ideas you have. This is a paper prototype. We've talked about this. At least one of you should be able to tell me what it's good for. Someone, please. You, with the cup. And would you say it's a high fidelity or a low fidelity thing? Yeah. So this is, yeah, you basically do what's stated on here. There's, you can actually buy, do you see this mobile thing here? They made that out of the cardboard. And you slide the thing through, so whenever you like slide to unlock, you would just slide it, or whenever you press something that would slide to the correct screen. Same for the, I'm guessing it should be an Apple Watch. But it looks more like the, do you remember the small iPod shuffles? Looks more like that. It's really, you can throw it away. You can burn it. You can make these in like 5 seconds. You can make them in 2 hours. You can buy kits that actually give you the templates for the phones and ready cut paper to even speed it up even more. Just Google like paper prototyping mobile kit, something like that. So this is what you call a spatial prototype. What would you use a spatial prototype for? So a short run, and this is actually for my master thesis. This is I'm using it to understand if I can use beacons to unlock a door. So why would I do it this way? Ideas from the developer.
Systematic approach to design if it's possible.
So it's a systematic approach to understand if it's possible. So what I'm trying to do is understand the technology.
Or how it should be located.
How it should, yeah, so the locations of the beacons. This is actually perfect, all right. What I tried to understand doing it this way was, indeed, do the beacons work? Where do the beacons need to be positioned? And can my, so you had a little app that transponded to these beacons and triangulated? Yeah, the position. So I would know if the user was here, 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 or here. Unfortunately, it was a massive failure because turns out beacons are horrible. So I did understand that the technology I was about to choose wasn't feasible for my approach. If I built this like full scale, embedded this in the right environment and so on, I would be so screwed. I would sunk so much money into it. This cost me like the cost of the beacons and the tape, and also a trip to my cabin. I recommend you guys prototype at cabins more often. So this is a clay model. Why would you use something? Why would you build a car in clay on the back with the glasses? Why would I build a car in clay? No? Okay, you would build something in clay or make a smaller replica for two choices. So this is a tiny, you can see the guy behind that, that's a tiny car. You can scan that car and make it into 3D art. So you don't have to be proficient at making 3D art, you have to be proficient at making form. So that's one reason you might do that. Other reason is that you understand the physicality of the object, you can understand the weight. Because you can weigh clay down to replicate the weight of the actual car. And they actually make like big versions of this as well to understand how they should paint the car, how they should program a robot, you know, the robot arms, to paint the car when they're done. So this is more a high fidelity prototype, I guess, because a lot of time and money went into this and a lot of design choices are already made. But they will figure out small things like, do the door handles actually work in the position they're meant to be? Can a user actually climb into this car? Can we paint the other side of that fender with our current like painter's gun? Or do we need new equipment? So they're trying to figure out the feasibility. This is from a movie called The Wizard of Oz. Who's seen The Wizard of Oz? Excellent. I love you guys already. Have you seen The Tin Man? It's on Netflix. You should totally see The Tin Man as well. So The Tin Man is a remake of The Wizard of Oz. So in The Wizard of Oz, for those of you that don't know the story, this is The Wizard of Oz. He's a tall, scary man. There's a lot of fire and stuff when Dorothy, like the main character, comes to visit The Wizard of Oz. Turns out this why would I do it this way? Yep, that is absolutely correct. You pretend that your system is real. But in general, you are the one controlling the system. So a hot potato currently for like developments and so on is something called chatbots and artificial intelligence and machine learning. So the idea is that instead of actually going to a web page, you can talk to like a client through Messenger or through Twitter or through whatever. and that will help you serve your purpose. Making that system is kind of complicated because you need natural language processing, you need natural language, something else that helps you decide what the natural language intent. So you need those two things, and those are highly complex things. But what you can do is you can make a screen or make a chatbot, and then you can just sit there and reply to everything to understand what are the typical questions a person might ask, how is the typical dialogue they expect, how fast do they expect the bots to be, and so on. So you're faking the whole thing. It's kind of like it's exactly like this. He's faking the whole thing. He's building something greater than himself to, this in this case, intimidate. In your case, you should do it to understand people. Which we're slowly driving into what's called a user-driven prototype. So the Wizard of Oz is not a user-driven prototype in the form, in the way it works, but it is a highly user-involved prototype. So a user-driven prototype is when you actually give your user the tools to create whatever you're trying to figure out. So instead of, you give them the power to design their solution. This is the IKEA kitchen planner. Have any of you used it at some point? Yeah, so did it help you make a better kitchen?
No.
No, okay. Yes. Maybe on you, no. So you have IKEA in your blood. So you would typically give this to a user and then have them design something. And then you would look at the design and see, why did they do this? And you need to be present when they're doing this as well. Or for the most effective way, you need to be sort of present so you can understand what they're doing while they're doing it. And when you give this to, like, let's say, 8 people, and you watch 8 people produce the solution for your problem, you will see similarities between how they think, how they create thing, and what they do. The product, the end product, won't be the same. My kitchen and your kitchen will look totally different. But we will have the same idea that we need the oven close, or the fridge needs to open this way to not knock into the other cabinets. Or we need a longer bench because we like to, make tequila parties, so we like to have the long tequila line. And you will see similarities. So you're actually giving the user the power to create their future, and then you try to understand, why did they do it like that? And the main point is, don't do this with one user and then replicate whatever they did. Because in general, people are horrible designers. They don't know what they want, they don't know why they want it, and then actually don't know how they want it. So your job is to understand, or help them understand that. Whoop, god damn it. And this is a really user-driven prototype called roleplay. This is an image for something called LARPing, or live action roleplay. Do you guys know what that is? It is hilarious. Tell me what is LARPing. You play out some kind of play. And the important bit is to give all your users a role and give them a purpose. And this can be either like, these people are trying to attack that that fortress over here. And they're giving roles as soldiers, and this guy is maybe an archer, and those guys are like protecting something. So they each have their role. And the designer could observe or embed themselves with this to try to understand, how does the dynamic of this situation actually work? You don't have to climb castles. You can do this with an ATM machine. If you're building security for an ATM, you can set up like a cardboard ATM and then have some people go up, take money, and look at how they're doing their transactions. Which way are they normally like looking? Are they afraid of what's behind them? Are they not? Which way do they approach? So there's a billion things you can actually understand. A company called Suprasteria, they're a consultancy agency in Oslo. They were hired to make the communication gear that soldiers use in Afghanistan. that's kind of hard to prototype. Like, how would you actually would you give them a prototype and say, hey, go off to war? Your life depends on this equipment, but hey, we're sure it will be fine. Give us the feedback when you're done. That's a horrible and not ethical and not safe and not sound or anything way. The other approach they can use is actually draft themselves and go to Afghanistan and fight wars and see what that is. That's embedding. That's like ethnography. That's not really feasible as well. But what you could do, which is probably a smarter choice, is to have a prototype and deliver it to a large-scale military simulation, like Cold Response up in the north, which is a NATO sort of like simulation of war. Because then you can safely observe how they use their equipment. And you can still do the, do you remember the backpack in the mud? You can still make sure that your prototype actually withstand the hardship that it needs to be. And you can see how it operates in stress. And that's a big thing when you're doing design. Normally you would test something in like a calm environment, but 99% of the time your product will be used in a chaotic environment. Take your app that you made in Angular that works really, really well when you're here on school, on campus, with your 100 T line and your processing power that's like huge, like top of the line mobile. And then you send it out to the wild and have a user on like Edge on a iPhone 3 trying to use your app, and everything sucks because you didn't account for the actual physicality. You didn't account for the world in your prototype. And roleplay will help you with that, but also actually going out and testing in the real world is really helpful. This is the quote. We don't have to read it through, but she basically says what you said. You try to understand something, and it lets you go beyond, I will not have you reading that. It lets you go beyond the situation. It lets you embed yourself in super dangerous situations and make choices that you wouldn't do because it's a safe environment. It's a game. So this is a wireframe we talked about, made in Balsamiq. Yes, question. And also they will operate on each other. They will be the they will take the role of the patient, and they will take the role of the nurse. So they know both sides of the story. They can empathize with the clients or the patients. So they know when a patient comes, they know what they went through, they know how to better solve for that situation, they know it's scary, they know it's hard to jump on the bench when you have a broken leg and so on, so they need to lower the bench for you. They know all these things, and that's basically what you're doing with role-play design. You're trying to understand, what is this? I read in this book, I highly recommend you reading it. It's about the design thinking process. To understand how they make the hospital, one of the guys faked an injury and admitted himself to hospital. So he was sitting in like the rolling chair, what do you call it? Like a wheelchair for like 2 days just to see at what level am I looking at stuff? How is this feeling? How am I being treated? How can I move around on my like by himself? And turns out that they needed to move like all the signs like 10 centimeters down and the wash thing down because it was horrible when you were in a wheelchair. And that's about universal design as well. It needs to be handy accessible. You could say that he could have figured this out without actually embedding himself in the situation, without doing the role play. But it was far more potent for him and the design team to actually be there, to feel the frustration, to feel the pain, to feel the friction, and then to solve for it. This is the origami thing I talked about. So this is an interactive, highly interactive prototype. So this is the result, and this is how you make it. So first you make your drawings. The text would be a layer, the image would be a layer, all this stuff, all these items would be layers. And then you will take your layers, and then you will take some kind of property like image. Then you will put like a tween or a something or an action on it. And then you get this like highly complex system out of drag and drop stuff. It's cool. You should play with it. Origami. It's made from Facebook? Yeah? No, Google? Facebook, yeah.
Sorry, did you miss the wireframe?
Oh yeah, so that's the low fidelity thing. This is Balsamiq. Took like 30 seconds to make. This is based on a affirmation workshop where you try to figure out what is the mental models for putting stuff. So we did card sorting. Do you know card sorting? You will get to that later in a different course, so we'll get back to that. But basically, it's made on some insight into how users work. Made it really, really fast. Went out, sat by the help desk of the company I work for, and then just figured out where would people click, how would they move around to solve the problems they currently had. Turned out icons are horrible. Turned out the labels were good. Turned out everyone clicked on this because they didn't know what these icons actually were or the context of the icons. So it gave like insight before we even made anything. Super, super valuable. Super low fidelity. Super easy. God damn it. So this is a value proposition. Who here knows a value proposition? So value proposition is a elevator pitch, which you might have heard of. So in the 80s, there was like this, everyone was trading, everything was fast, everything was booming, and they needed a way to sell their product within the time of an elevator ride. So it's like 20 seconds. You have 20 seconds to convince me to invest in your product. That is not of a long time. And it makes it hard to tell me why I should care, and why your users should care, and why any of this matters, and why I shouldn't just go about my day. So basically, you have this structure already done, and you need to fill out these purple bits. That's hard, but what you can do is you can make your first draft, you can make your MVP, and then you can test it, and then you can see, do you have the right product category? Do you have the right customer target? Do you have all these things? And you can do that, I would say, between an hour.
Is value proposition same meaning with unique selling point?
Sorry?
Is it same meaning with unique selling
point? Yeah, so your unique selling points would be unique differentiator. So that's your USPs. Yeah. So the value proposition is a embodiment of your unique selling points, your target group, why you're doing this, which needs you're solving, and what's my benefit per cost to doing this. So benefit per cost would be, why is it more, why does it cost me less resources to do the thing you're proposing me to do instead of the thing I'm doing? Did that make sense? I think that made sense. So this is about understanding the business, right? Because if you have this genius design, you will have at least 100 people doing the same exact genius thing. Because, to be frank, designers aren't special. We aren't special snowflake. We are problem solvers. And the problem you're trying to solve has been solved 1,000 times before. Leonardo da Vinci solved your problem in 1600s. But what you need is a solid foundation for selling your problem or your solution to your clients, to your customers, to your users. And your value proposition will help tremendously. So all these prototypes, there are as many prototype methods and tools and as there are designers, so there's a billion. Everyone has their favorite. Everyone says that this is the only one you should use. I would recommend you try different. Try multiples. See what happens when you go high fidelity when you should have gone low fidelity. Go low fidelity in a board meeting. Do all the wrong things and experiment a lot now when you're in school, because that's really important. But every single one of your prototypes will live in this four-dimensional space, or three-dimensional space. It would be some relation to the real location, like, are you actually at the location, or are you mimicking the location, and how close can you get to your actual location? And is your user involvement, like, how close can you get to your end user? And it's the fidelity, like, how close it is to the finished product. And there's no right or wrong place to put it in. The important thing is that you know why you're creating the prototype you're creating and why you do it the way you do it. God damn it. So this is horrible design. It has a touch ring and buttons. So whenever I click the button, I also click the touch ring. This could have been prototyped, and people could have seen that I have butterfingers and I touch all the button at once. So do that before you actually create a product that I buy. So the whole prototyping thing that I've been talking about for ages now is not an exact science. It's not the scientific model. It's not something you will, if you replicate your prototype, you will get different answers. So the main point is to ask multiple people the same questions so you understand the trend. So a guy called Steve Krug, anyone you know about Steve Krug, he wrote Rocket Surgery Made Easy and Don't Make Me Think. It's like two of the introduction books to UX. I would highly recommend Don't Make Me Think. He tells about this recruit loosely and grade on a curve. So try to talk to at least 5 to 8 people and then grade their answers in relation to how close they fit your user group. Do any of you know this image? Do you know the image?
I think so.
Yeah, what is it?
It's a Challenger?
Yes, that's correct. So the Challenger blew up due to faulty navigation. It was a horrible accident. No one liked it. But it was misinterpretation of two systems talking together. It wasn't simulated good enough before they actually launched the rocket. Catastrophe. All the crew died, and a $10 billion spaceship blew up. And it was like 6 years or something, science project blew up. Because they didn't prototype the thing, they didn't simulate it, they didn't understand the consequences. So I'm not saying they did wrong, but I'm saying you should try to figure this thing out early before you blow up your product. That's the point I was trying to make. So there's some ways you can go wrong here. We talked about them. So what do I mean by incorrect fidelity? Anyone? Guy with the cap? So I'm meaning going either too low or too high, like being a too complex prototype when you're supposed to have something simple, going too simple when you're trying to figure out your animation, something like that. Going for T2000 over here when you were probably more aligned to have Wall-E or something. Like, you invested into this design, which is kind of scary, when you should have invested into something cute. But you didn't know because you doubled down on your initial prototype. You never made different approaches. So you can choose the wrong user. You can test something that's perfectly well. You can test your product. It's the greatest product. And you're actually nailing the solution. But you're talking to the wrong people. Like here in school, when you're doing a student project, let's say about nurses, turns out what you need to talk to are elderly disabled people. But you talk to the nurses and the people in the cafeteria, totally wrong user group, they will give you wrong feedback. Maybe your problem was that the fonts are not readable when you have Gråstad. Maybe that was your problem. But your user group told you, well, it's not hip enough, it needs to be like faster, it needs to work on my mobile phone, something like that. So you got the wrong input. You can choose the wrong use case. This is the Salif juicer. I love that thing. It's my favorite design of all time. It is So nice to look at. Sold by Alessi, super expensive. Tells a whole story about how I like beautiful aesthetically things. I mean, look at the curves. Look at the way it looks. It has small like rubber things so it won't slide on your countertop. It's made of casts, some kind of cast metal, so it's really heavy. It's patented or chromed, so it survives the dishwasher. But it doesn't squeeze oranges. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible juicer for all the wrong reasons. It's annoying as fuck because they didn't use the right use case when they tested it. They didn't check, does this actually squeeze lemons? They checked, would you buy it? Is it pleasant? Is it nice? But it's not usable. So they didn't prototype the right use case. And last thing is ego. And in this I want a discussion. What do I mean by this? I won't tell you what I mean by this before we actually talk about it. Someone, California.
Is that to do with like, say you're designing something and you're like, oh, it's so great, I don't need to do all the stuff that already knows it? Like
maybe. Other thoughts?
Question is maybe who are you designing for? Are you designing for yourself or a customer? That might be a part of the ego.
Interesting. Other thoughts? Yeah?
That you know better than the user or the person actually designing for. So like, no, I know this is best. So I don't need to listen to you. I don't need to take this feedback because I know best.
So that's the gist of it. You are not your user. You will never understand how your user work. You can't decide on behalf of your user how to solve something. An ego is one of the main things that will get you fired as a designer. If you impose your design on something and turns out it doesn't work when you're in production, you will lose your job because you're losing your company money and you're totally useless as a designer. Your job as designer is to remove the ego from the system or from the process. It's to not embed your feelings into the final product. It's to embed your user's feelings. It's not for you to have the best solution. It's for you to solve the problem. It's for you not for you to make the prettiest thing. It's for you to make something feasible, viable, reliable, and desirable. So burst your ego. And there's a lot of techniques you can actually do to not bring your ego into prototyping. First thing is to sit down and think, what are the solutions I think will happen? What will happen in this situation? Write all those things down on a note. Read that note and then put it aside. And then go in. And it's to listen. When you're doing when you're doing user tests on your prototype after this or in the workshop, listen to what your users are actually saying. Listen to why they're saying it. Look at their body language when they're trying your thing. Don't go, this is my product, solve this thing, and then check whether or not they could solve it. Try to make things as open as possible. Don't test the user's ability to understand your design. Test the design's ability to solve the use case. So that's two different things. So try to remove yourself from the solution. And this is hard because this is one of the skills that separate junior designers from senior designers, is the ability to remove your feelings from the design. If you're always in a critique meeting, if you take it personally that someone doesn't understand how your design works, or if you take it personally that your colors are not working for someone that has color vision deficit or the color blindness, you will fail. Because it's not about you, it's about your user. And this is the only way you come to get to be a senior designer or come to run your own design firm, is to remove your ego. Or you can, of course, you can run your own design firm with huge amounts of ego, but your products will fail, and you won't be able to have that company for long. So remove your ego is one of the most important things you will be doing today. And try to listen to what the customers say and how they react, what they're doing. Don't try to embed your solution into it. Don't give them the solution and see if they understand it. Observe. So, punchlines. We have our rocket theme going on today for you, those of you who might not noticed. So this is SpaceX. Everyone know Elon Musk, right? Elon Musk. He built a bunch of rockets to see if he can make something go out to the stratosphere and back down and be reusable. This is the first time his rocket actually successfully landed. He blew up like 7 of these before. So he made a bunch of prototypes and he blew them up until he succeeded, until he understood what was going on. And it's about the disposability of your prototype. Like, blow your shit up to understand how it works. The best way to understand something is to break it. Like, that's the best way to understand anything in life. Think about your last relationship. You didn't understand what you were doing wrong until it ended. Until you had horrible, miserably heartache. That's when we understood it. Think about the last time you bought, like, I don't know, a fridge or whatever, your washing machine, and it broke down. You didn't understand the inner mechanics of it until you, like, took a hammer to it and tore out its guts. And like, oh, it's a motor there. Okay, maybe the motor was broke. These are the things. So break your prototype. It's meant to be broken. You're not meant to figure out if it works or not. You're meant to figure out how it doesn't work so you can improve the bits that don't work. And that's about the ego affirmation testing. You're not testing if your prototype works. You're testing how it doesn't work. So a couple of do's and don'ts. On the right side, if you do that, how likely are you to succeed? Anyone? Would you do the things on the left or the things on the right? I think I hammered the point through. Which side would you choose? Would you go for Team Bat or Team Apple, I guess? Team Apple. Who's with Team Apple? Okay, so who's with Team Bat? At least some of you should be, because not everyone had their hand up. So Anna, why are you with Team Bat? You changed sides. Sneaky. So why are you with Team Apple? Before you go to, that's an interesting reflection, before you go over to the bat side. So it's not a do one or do the other, maybe. Maybe it's do both, but do this first. Sneaky, clever. So yeah, my point is, early on in the process, do focus on speed over accuracy. Make it low fidelity, make it tossable, make it like out of cardboard. Prefer user input, like what are your users actually saying about your product, over what the theory is saying. Like, this book is super amazing. Like, all your books are good. You can read them for ages, but you still won't be a better designer until you actually try to design solutions and see how they work when they hit the real world, because the real world will break most of your stuff. Your pretty design won't work when it's actually on one of those higher-end platforms. Maybe your design needs some kind of technology that's not present, so it will break. So do your user input, and do doing over thinking. Like, actually create stuff and see how it works over sitting for hours on end and being clever about your design. And, oh, if I change this one pixel to the side, it will be perfect. It won't. You need to test it. Go out. Make a new one. Make two completely different solutions. Test them both and make one that's a combination of them both. This is way better than having one perfect. testing over discussing, you can discuss like, oh yeah, but this user flow tells this and this user flow tells this. During that hour, you can have spoken to like 5 people and showed 5 people your design and come up with a bazillion new things you need to fix. So test. Prototype over production code. We went through this, like make a prototype and don't put prototype code into production. That's kind of also important. So when you've made your prototype, unless you're using like actually production grade code in your prototype, don't put it into production. Like redo it. It's a sketch. It's a sketch for what you're going to do. It's not the final product. Change or perfection, so don't pixel push too much. Either go to different routes. Do you remember the tree with all the lines going up but one going into a bat? Don't focus on the bat. Focus on all the other ways you can have solved the same problem and see how that works. And also throw away your prototypes. They are meant to be disposable. You're not meant to... It's not rigorous science. You're not meant to keep these or store them. Just like do it and toss it. Don't build on it too much. Build a new one. Remember Leonardo da Vinci from the start? So he has these compendiums of drawings. The last one was sold or bought on an auction by Bill Gates for like $1 bazillion. If you look in his compendiums, some of them are on display. They will show you iteration upon iteration upon iteration on the same drawing. Maybe he made a prototype and then he drew to understand how does this prototype actually work. And then he made a new prototype based on that drawing. So he kept the things, but he didn't build on the thing. He built a new thing with new insight. He didn't change the thing he had. So he threw away his first draft and made a new thing. He didn't copy it. So, disposable thing. And this is why you have to move like really, really fast and use low fidelity and do it instead of thinking about it. Because if you can like make 5 versions of something and then make a final version, it's way better than making the final version up front. So I will leave you with this. This is a quote from Don Norman. Have any of you read the Design of Everyday Things book? It's this one. It was black when I bought it. I think this is the same you have in your shop. It's kind of like, he's one of the main like UX, interaction design, social design people. He has this interesting approach to problem solving. When he's challenged with something, he will go like bananas and figuring it out. Then he will write a book about it. And then he will go off and do something else. So he makes a bunch of prototypes, then finalizes something, and then goes and do something else. That makes him interesting. The quote, when the design of something as simple as a door has to come with instruction manuals, even a one-word manual, then it's a failure, poorly designed. What he's talking about is the push-pull signs you find on multiple doors, which is stupid, because you should be able to just use a door intuitively. And maybe they could have prototyped that door before putting it into production. So that's about it. This is a spaceman high-fiving a child. It's awesome. So are there questions? I know it was a lot, and it was fairly rampant. So I'm sure you, at some point, wondered something. I will be here for the rest of the day. So will these two fine gentlemen. I will kick it over to Anders Petter. He will present the assignment we're working on and a little bit about when and how we will be doing it. Is that okay?
Do you need to stretch your legs? Or
short coffee break, sure. 5 minutes.
5 minutes?
Okay. Sweet.
Let's start again, 10 minutes apart.
Får jag bara fråga, kan du växla till den andra?
Är det egentligen seminar 3 eller är det seminar 2?
Ja, det är seminar 3. Måste jag använda din som...
Nej, det kan bruka fint.
Okej.
Men vad jag brukar den där. Så är det... Det är en sån... Den ringen där är tydligen touch. Så
okay.
Den är superintern.
All right. So, let's go on with the design brief for today. And as we talked about yesterday, you can use the task 3 scenarios and personas that you have delivered and into this now we're here, so we will you will work in your groups. It's a group assignment, and you will design, prototype and test a part of a new e-learning platform. So you can choose a part. And why it says e-learning platform, it's very widely defined, but we want you to do something new, not only replicate Blackboard or whatever. And you will test it with users and present the first version, redesign it and present it, test it with users and present the second version. We hope we will be able to get that far today. And then next time you meet Sebastian, you can present the second version, and in preparation for that, again test and redesign it. So you will have many iterations of coming up with something, prototyping it, and test it. No. You work in your group, and you just when you present it, for. Now today we present in class, I think, but it's an option that you. It's more about you can decide to present in class or for two other groups, let's say, also. So, yeah. It is one of those iterations, you could say. So I know they're overlapping, but you also have to see that somebody is off campus and not here at all. So you could say this is a help for doing that. Our point is, or my point at least, is that you should iterate and do many rounds of thinking, sketching, testing, go back, redesign, test. So the group assignment is to design, prototype, and use to test a part of this new e-learning platform. And the input, as I said, is the it should be based on personas and user scenarios. and sorting of also the sorting of post-it notes and put them into categories and so on. All that work that you had done in task three, but also before that, the things you did with Frode here on in groups also. And I said it should be based. This is also, you have to think a bit pragmatic here. It's about what kind of users can you find today. So it's very sketchy, you could say. So you also have to maybe make compromises. But and maybe select one of the personas that you have been thinking about, and you've done a lot of work with that. I read most of the task three hand-ins you did. So many of the groups have put very much and detailed work into defining the personas, the persons. Oop. Yeah, and this is more for the people that wasn't here before, but what the persona is. It's important that you think as detailed as, but you have done this work already, so you have to think about the actual persona and where can you find them here? Where can you find somebody that matches? The persona is not user. This is an imagination. This is just theory. So you have to go out and find somebody that matches that. You won't find a person that is exactly that name, that age, that gender, that profession. But you have to see here where you get it. And the how then. This is my suggestion, and we see how far we get here in the iterations. But use paper prototyping and wireframes, and the persons, I think about people in informatics or in computer science, you are maybe more used to use software tools, and you're welcome to do that. And but it's the point is use what Sebastian has talked about now and the low fidelity, so that you fast get to a result and can go out and test it. So that's it. The again, to put it blunt, the focus is on quantity, not quality today. So and so use a paper prototyping wireframes to sketch a first version. Test the paper prototyping with maybe 1, 2 to 4 users. See what you find. If you think here on campus, you can think student, teachers, administrative staff. And if you have defined that you want to have an older woman outside of NTNU, we will give you extra credits for that. If you manage to find today people here that matches your personas. Maybe you only have students and teachers, then you will find them here. But what if you have somebody outside of NTNU? And again, discuss your findings, test it, and then discuss your findings, and present it here in class. So, and then we redesign it and do it over again. So my suggestion is focus on, you have some time before lunch, focus in the groups on the first step and try to see how you find users. How would you find users? Here, today, now. And if we, just to put it out, you could test on each other, but would that be so good? Wouldn't it be better? Maybe we'll get a better result if you test on somebody that doesn't know about the brief or that's not involved in, yeah. That's my suggestion. But how would you find users? Any ideas? Cafeteria, yes. Good idea. So candy or without candy? Huh? Any other suggestions? How would you find? Yeah?
In areas where people seem to chill out and are not doing something important, so you don't disturb them.
Just don't tell them that they are not doing anything. Chill out, relaxed zones, areas, yeah. Yeah? Yeah.
For example, if we are looking for someone that's kind of, well, checking something on their way to class, maybe stand in the hallway to try and get somebody.
Yeah. How long time do you think you will get them?
Depends.
Yeah. Yeah. What if somebody is going on the way to the lecture, what would you say to him or her? Yeah. And then, yeah.
Just a short input, maybe a minute. That's an excellent idea. So when they redesign the opera pages, do you know this? They did exactly that. They were at the opera, talking to people who were going into opera, into shows. Two things there. One is that you might think you have the right user, but it turned out that the people actually at the offer were not the people using the webpage. Turns out other people had more tickets for using the webpage. So that's one thing to be just try to notice is are the people I think are the right people. And the other thing is to time your user time. Be very specific at how long you take. Don't say, do you have 5 minutes? Normal problem would occur. So if you're trying to make a newspaper app, stand by some news outlet or something, talk to people who are actually reading the news. If you're trying to make a time schedule for people in a hurry, try to catch people in the hurry and see if they actually have time to use your thing. If you're trying to sell opera tickets, be at the opera and so on. So it's go to the source. Mm-hmm. So,
and thank you. So timing, and I also think it's about creating expectations. So and it also includes what you show them. What then if you say, do you have a moment? Do you have 1 minute? Can I ask you about an app for using a new e-learning platform? What do you have to show them? You have 1 minute. You said, I want 1 minute. You create expectation. Can it be something on a napkin? Can it be something on? Can it be? Do you have an iPad or your smartphone there? Do you have? Okay.
So
the question is, what will you actually show them? I think Steve Krug in Rocket Science, he uses renting a car, and then he has 15, 20 minutes. There's a very good video of that. But when he interviews somebody and he says, can you rent a car? So they sit down, they have a laptop and they do that. But then they have 15, 20 minutes. So if you have 1 minute, maybe you can't do that, but yes, I agree. Can you find the red dot? Or you could also have something very simple to say, what is this? What do you think this is? So you have to decide on what level you will ask them. You can't give them a napkin and say, can you navigate and rent a car? It doesn't make sense. Then they.
Well, maybe it's a poor example, but then as opposed to that, in the canteen, maybe you show a map and say, can you figure out what the price of a coffee is in this thing? So it's depending on where you are.
Yeah.
So you go to the place where people who are likely to use that function are in. That
yeah.
was my point.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you. What is an open-ended question?
That you just gave me now is an open-ended question.
Oh.
What is an open-ended question? That's an open-ended question. So it doesn't have a yes or a no or a precise outcome. It has, it affords the user to tell a story. So what you're asking is, give me your thoughts. It's not give me a yes or no answer. So can you find the red dot is a yes or no answer? Yes, it's there. Right. How would you go about
So, okay.
And this is why you should like prototype a lot and test a lot, because you learn this and like, you learn by doing it. And we will do some critiquing later and try to look for these things when you look at how other people solve design problems as well. Like how do they structure their process? Did they use the right kind of prototype for the question they were trying to figure out? What was the question? And so on. We'll get into that later.
Mm-hmm.
Scenario-based approach is a nice one. So a scenario-based approach is where you give the user some frame of reference. Like, you are here at the train station, and you're about to board the train, and then you give them some kind of task. How would you make sure you're at the right seat? And then you give them something they might solve it with, like your app. And then you see,
can they find their seat in the on the app, and do they understand the layout, do they understand the navigation, and so on? Instead of the opposite thing would be have the app open on the seat thing and be, is this your seat? That's a very narrow question.
Mm.
It's not a tangible thing. It's kind of fluent, what you're looking for.
It might also be that you think you want to have answer on this question, but that's ego driven. When you're getting out there, you might want to ask that question: can you please find your seat, or can you please do this? But you have to be listen and be empathic to that. The user might be interested in something totally different. It might not be the accurate. So during testing and extended testing, you will find things you didn't, that wasn't on your map before. So I would say any question would do in the beginning, but you have to spend enough time and maybe go back and forth many times. So I guess all these are questions now, because many of you have maybe not done so much user testing. So one example. In a doctor's office, the doctors had spent a lot of money invested in an iPad app that they should use when tutoring or discussing cancer treatment with patients. And they wanted designers to come and evaluate it, because they made somebody make it, a designer, but then they wanted another designer come and evaluate it. And they were very proud of their iPad app. But it turned out that the room that the designer then came to, they should sit on the hospital beds that are high up, and you have this paper on it, so it should be sterilized. And you should, they said, okay, can you not please evaluate my iPad app? And the designer said, well, should I sit here? Should I take off my clothes? Because it's, you know, examination room. No, you should just sit here. And should I sit up high up here in my business suit and look? You need to get a sofa and some coffee. And so what it ended up with, it was the doctors was very, they asked the wrong question and they had the wrong solution. But they ended up that the doctors were very sour, very angry at the designer. And in the end, they bought the sofa and get rid of the hospital bed and so on. But the thing is, this happens all the time. It's my experience when you go out and so you have to start in somewhere, and the personas and the scenarios is a starting point. But even in a place here, or even in the cafeteria, I think you will find confusing and disturbing answers that you didn't think about, and that's good. Okay. I don't know if you agree, but this is it's a trial and error. You have to go out and test. You can't say anything unless you do it.
And also, one interesting thing to note is that you can't fail doing this.
No.
Just doing it will give you some kind of insight, even though you're doing it horribly wrong. Know how you did it wrong. So the reflection part afterwards, like what did I do, how did this, are the things I got the things I wanted to get, or are they stuff I missed? The branching difference between
functionality testing and user research would be the different way of asking the question.
Any other questions, or are you prepared to just? You just have to try it, I think.
Pro tip when you're doing this, have one person ask the question and be the facilitator of the test. Like show the design, go through it, talk to the person. Have one or two other people take notes. And look at the body language, look at where the user is looking, listen to what kind of questions they ask, if they ask, and try to make them talk out loud. So talking out loud is you're trying to expose how they think. Really, really, really dumb example is if he asked me, well, open the door, but talk out loud, I will be, okay, so I go to the door and then I probably push the handle and then I, oh, yeah, it worked, but what was that clicking noise? That would be asking someone to talk or think out loud. So this is why we do the open-ended questions. Asking them to solve a specific task without giving an instruction. And then look, listen, and try to understand why they're being interested. And ask all of questions if something is interesting.
Yeah, and
it's easier if one facilitates the test. So you're not three people going, like, look at the design. Mm-hmm. One or two other people taking notes. And then you discuss within the group afterwards, like, what did you see, what did you see, why did they do it this way? And a bit of importance, I didn't have it on the slide, but it's important, that you don't design during your tests. So you do one user test, and it points to this thing being wrong. Don't fix that thing and do a new test. Do five tests with the exactly same material, with the exactly same approach. Because what you're looking for is the trend. You're trying to figure out what are the common denominator of problems in your product. You're not doing fixing on the fly. You're not designing on the fly. And also, you don't. Nobody can design on the fly. You need proper process to design. So, two takes away. One facilitates, someone monitors, discuss, do the same thing with the exact same thing all through your five tests, and then synthesize your results into an actionable list. Make sense? Question?
Okay. Then I suggest get into groups and do everybody have groups here today? From task three or... Otherwise, you have to connect into bigger groups, yeah?
Today.
You are alone today?
Yes.
Can you choose?
Huh?
Can you choose a group, or...?
Maybe I can do it.
Yeah?
It's not going to be testing the same thing that we are, because my group is testing them.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But, do you have a group? Yeah. Everybody else? Is somebody that is alone today? No? Okay. Then just get on with it, and we meet here at 1 o'clock. Is that... Huh? Halv två, kanske. Half past... If we meet here half past one. No, sorry, half past one, yeah, half past one.
Cool.
And then you have a little more time. But you have to sketch something, or maybe you already have something you have sketched. Use that. For me, it can be something on a napkin. That's totally fine. Don't misunderstand me. I love napkins. But you can't ask very advanced question about the aesthetics or the... Make something. If time is the essence, make something very quick and dirty. Focus on quantity, and rather change it later. Okay.
grading students yesterday, so I see there are two options, save as draft and submit. So maybe you just click save, and that's why we can see any
okay,
your feedback.
I will.
Yeah.